show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. A lot to talk about, and naturally, post-New Hampshire primary, my, what a surprise we had last night. Unbelievable. Learned an important lesson last night, and I'm sure a lot of you did as well. Maybe you learned it before I did, but don't ever believe the polls. Unbelievable story last night. You know, as it unfolded on and on and on throughout the night, you kept thinking, well, okay, now this is when all the votes are going to come in that's going to provide that 10, 12, 14-point margin that Zogby and everybody... And by the way, Zogby, you got to be terribly embarrassed today. Oh, yes, we'll talk about all that and more today here in the Guy James Show, coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. And we're awfully glad to have all of you along today, and we do hope you'll participate in the discussion. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254, toll-free. Glad to have you join the discussion today. Many, many things to talk about. Of course, primarily we're going to be talking about the fantastic story from last night. The narrow but surprising victory by Hillary Clinton over Obama. And who thought just a few weeks ago, how many of you thought we'd be sitting here today saying it was it'd be a big surprise that Hillary Clinton beat Obama in the New Hampshire primary, maybe even 2 weeks ago. But all the momentum that came along with the big Iowa victory, the decisive Iowa victory by Barack Obama, and then the building over the weekend of a big margin, according to the polls, by Obama in New Hampshire. So it just was a big surprise. I know my prediction, which was based on an amalgamation of all the polls, was completely off. I'm trying to remember where I had it. I think I had Obama. I averaged all the polls, and I think we had it at Obama 43 and Hillary 30 and Edwards 20, and it didn't work out that way. And it's an exciting time, very exciting time for the Democratic Party. Looks like we're going to have a real fight on our hands for the nomination. That's the way it should be. I don't personally like to see anybody so-called coronated early on in it, and it's much better to get everybody vetted and have our fight, get it over with. I hope it's not much of a fight this year. I hope everybody's civil and doesn't, you know, that we don't self-destruct once again. We Democrats are very, very good at that. The Republicans, John McCain, nationally comes out on top. I do have this question. I wonder at the next Republican debate, I wonder if they'll keep Giuliani and Fred Thompson out of the debate. Really? After all, you know, they kept Paul out of the last one because they said he didn't qualify. And so, since he ran ahead of Fred Thompson and neck, you might as well say, with Giuliani, are they going to keep them out and put Ron Paul in the next one? Hey, let's be fair about this. And I think another big question is, now that we see McCain comes up with a very narrow victory last night, but he did win. And as we all know, he is definitely damaged goods. I mean, John McCain has no chance of winning the presidency. Wonder if Newt Gingrich will come riding in on his big white horse and try and get all the arch conservatives gathered up for a run at the presidency. Stranger things have happened. I keep thinking somebody will emerge for the Republicans, and I guess there's nobody left but Gingrich. So, you know, a little bit off the wall prediction there, but maybe actually not a prediction, just something for to think about. Will Newty come running in and try and be the salvation of the Republican Party? God knows they need it right now. Don't you just love politics? I do. I guess obviously I do, or wouldn't be talking to you right now, right here. But I believe last night in New Hampshire, I saw the biggest surprise vote of my political lifetime. And like I said, who would have thunk it a couple of weeks ago that this is what we'd be talking about today, is Hillary winning as a surprise. But the pundits are going to try and explain it all day today and all evening to evening, and it's going to be interesting to hear how many takes there are on the situation. And, of course, I have some takes on the situation myself. Whatever could it be that caused the polls, which, by the way, had been so very accurate in Iowa. Very accurate now. What could it be that threw them so far off? And after really looking at the situation, I think it could really only be a couple of things. I've thought about it from many different angles. I've read about many different angles. But I'll give you my 2 cents worth for what it's worth, and maybe more or less 2 cents. But one of the possible answers is that the polls in Iowa were accurate because those people polled were truthful when they answered the question, who are you going to vote for? That's not to say they're any more honest, really, in Iowa that they aren't than they are in New Hampshire, but they were truthful because they had to stand up in front of their neighbors and the caucuses out there and publicly cast their vote. It's no secret who you're voting for in the Iowa caucus. Therefore, we didn't have an instance of what they call in political circles the... I'm trying to think of the name. The Bradley effect. And the Bradley effect is named because, like, back in the 80s, there was a mayor out in Los Angeles by the name of Tom Bradley, a very popular mayor. He was running for governor. And the polls had him in a big lead against this, what was his name, Juzmajian? I can never pronounce the guy's name. Anyway, Bradley lost that race after being way ahead in the polls, and the people in the know decided that the voters would say that they would vote for a black man when they were asked, and then in the voting booth they'd vote for the white guy, that there was a racist element to this whole thing. And it could be, and I emphasize it could be, that that's what happened in New Hampshire last night. The pollsters were told by the voters that they would vote for a black man, but they never intended to from the beginning. And that's one theory. But I got to tell you, I don't think really that's what happened. It's just a theory. And granted, I was wrong with the rest of the pundits, but all I had to go on was a variety of polls like everyone else. Lesson learned. And if one is going to make predictions, one must probably go to the state in question and sit down and talk to as good a cross-section of voters as you possibly can, and then accurately report what you hear and what you feel is the truth of the matter. And that's the only way to really do it, is to talk to the people. Go here and go there in the state, get a cross-section, talk to them. And here's what I think really happened last night. I really think there was a last-minute swing, and I truly believe it was because of two different effects. And number one, and the most important one, was that the voters finally got to see the real Hillary Clinton. And maybe the real Hillary Clinton isn't the proper way to say it. Maybe I should say that they finally saw the rest of Hillary Clinton. Finally, they saw the softer, the more human side, if you will, of her. And she owes that to the networks. She really does. The networks and the people who hate her in the media, who showed over and over and over again that little scene of her tearing up a little bit a few nights ago. And I think that some who saw it thought that she was acting and thought it was a ploy on Hillary's part. And I believe they were wrong. I think it was completely genuine, and it was completely honest, and it showed the emotions of a strong woman who, let's face it, has been absolutely vilified by the media in the most mean-spirited way that I think I've ever seen. As I've mentioned many times on the show, if you think they hated Bill, they hate Hillary twice as much. And regardless of what you think about Hillary Clinton, you got to admit that the press was bashing her nonstop in the hope that Obama would clean her clock in New Hampshire and they'd have this big story about how Obama has conquered all and put an end to the Clinton machine. You know, here's a woman who was bashed early on for coming across as very strong, as being calculating and cold and such. And so she shows a softer emotional side. And they thought she couldn't possibly be acting genuine. And very obviously, the voters thought differently. And I believe that's what happened. I think the voters got tired of seeing Hillary Clinton kicked around in the media. And the and I was so happy. I know a lot of you probably saw it last night, the seemingly personal vendetta by Chris Matthews helped her as well. And I do believe the voters in New Hampshire and everywhere else, for that matter, are just as sickened as I am by his daily, nightly, vicious campaign against Hillary Clinton. I think voters have become turned off by Matthews and rebelled against his obvious hatred for all things Clinton. God, his lip curls when he talks about either one of them. And I also think Keith Olbermann made Matthews look like a real ass on that issue last night. And thank you to Rachel Maddow for pointing it out for the whole world to see, everybody that was watching. I know many of you saw that. But it was really great to see Matthews put in his place as possibly being one of the elements that played in Hillary's favor, and God knows that that's something that he just can't live with. And although Hillary isn't my preferred candidate, and if you listen to this show very often, you know she hasn't been from the very beginning, I'll defend her against those kinds of attacks. And I believe she's a very strong, intelligent woman who does, in fact, care deeply about the future of America. I have some important differences with her concerning policy, but regardless of my differences with her, I will support her strongly if it turns out that she wins the nomination. And just as I will strongly support Barack Obama, I'm a liberal Democrat. And I've always been a liberal Democrat, and I always will be, and I'll support the eventual nominee of this party because whomever it turns out to be, no matter which one it turns out to be, they'll be vastly superior to the Republican candidate. Differences in or not, I'd rather have someone be president whom I agree with most of the time than a Republican with whom I never agree with, and that's what we're faced with in this election. So it was a very, very, very interesting night last night. I loved it. I got to tell you, I loved it. I watched it and, not rooting for anybody in particular in that race. I just found it oh so interesting. And, let me say this again. I'm okay with anybody being against Hillary Clinton and her policies and her candidacy. But you'd have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to see the obvious hatred that's been directed toward her over the weekend and into Tuesday. You saw it. I always thought the media was supposed to be fair and impartial, and that's not what I've been seeing at all. And I really believe the good people of New Hampshire saw the piling on and recognized it as some sort of an attempt to influence their votes. And obviously, they're a good bit smarter than that, as it turns out, especially the women. And speaking of the women, what about the so-called Oprah Winfrey effect? What happened? There was a lot of talk that Oprah had a vast influence on the Iowa crowd. Didn't she have an influence on the New Hampshire crowd? I don't know. I don't know what's happening there. I really, really don't know. But wouldn't it be interesting, and I was thinking about this a little while ago, I was talking to a friend on the phone, wouldn't it be interesting if all the hatred and the vitriol thrown at Hillary by the media to cause her defeat, wouldn't it be interesting if all of that ends up being what propels her to the White House? Oh my. Something interesting to ponder, that's for sure. Join us here on the Guy James Show, 866-546-5254. I've been to the New Hampshire Secretary of State to get the final tally on everything, and they're a bit behind up there. They don't have everything completely tallied yet. But it appears that there is a it doesn't appear. We know there was a record turnout. And once again, we do know that the Democrats had a huge increase in their vote. The Republicans did not. We know once again that the independents swung over for the Democrat side. That's a good thing. We also know that the youth voted primarily Democrat, and that's a good thing. They had a very good turnout. The great thing about the young voters. So all in all, for Democrats, last night was a terrific night. And once again, I think the big story is not necessarily who won, because we've got a great field of candidates, but the story is who voted and how many voted and how the independents voted. That's the big story. And once again, it came across very, very, very strongly in favor of the Democrats. So it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out, most certainly. What else did we have down here we wanted to talk about a little bit today? Having trouble here with one of the pieces of equipment. I was talking about Matthews and his hatred toward Hillary Clinton, and if I could talk to that SOB, I think I'd be inclined to smack him right in the kisser. I'm sick of it, and I don't care if you're who you support. I don't care if he was going after Obama. I don't care if he was going after Edwards. I don't care if he's going after Kucinich. I don't care if he's going after Dodd or Joe Biden or Bill Richardson, it doesn't matter. Nobody, none of the candidates deserve the terrible comments like Chris Matthews has been putting forth toward Hillary Clinton day after day after day. And I want you to hear his comments here from last night. First, here's a short clip, one from last night about how he's never going to underestimate him again. And then from this morning, quite a different story.
And I give her a lot of personal credit. I will never underestimate Hillary Clinton again.
That's last night. Now,
I think the Hillary appeal has always been somewhat about her tough are a mix of toughness and sympathy for her. Let's not forget, and I'll be brutal, the reason she's a U.S. senator, the reason she's a candidate for president, the reason she may be a front runner is her husband messed around.
Yeah, but
that's how she got to be senator from New York. We keep forgetting it. She didn't win there on her merit. She won because everybody felt, my God, this woman stood up under humiliation. Right? That's what happened. That's how it happened. In 1998, she went to New York and campaigned for Chuck Schumer as almost like the grieving widow of absurdity. And she did it so well, okay, and courageously. But it was about the humiliation of Bill Clinton.
Now, is that a little speech about hatred? Is that not filled with hatred? A vicious attack on Hillary Clinton by Chris Matthews, who has always claimed off the record to kind of be a liberal Democrat. That SOB, to sit and talk about Hillary Clinton in that fashion or any one of the Democratic candidates in that fashion, how absurd. How absurd is that contention of his that, oh, Hillary, she on her own reason she got elected. I mean, what a smack in the face to the voters of New York. That they would elect somebody on a sympathy vote because her husband ran around? What the hell does he think the voters of New York are? I mean, this is an intelligent woman, educated woman, and he's claiming that the only reason she was elected to the United States Senate from the state of New York is because she more or less got a sympathy vote because her husband was running around. Give me a break. Matthews, I don't know if he's getting senile. I don't know what's the matter with him, but he's beginning to look more clownish every single day. Every single day he says something completely stupid. And I don't know if I've got that other cut around here. Here he is last night. He's got this man love thing for Tom DeLay. You know he does. And for Rudy Giuliani. He's just, he'd kiss either one of them on the lips if he had a chance. And he's talking oh so lovingly to Tom DeLay last night. You know, a despicable character. A man of ill repute. And Matthews just loves him. Just loves him. And has him on the show at every opportunity. And last night, Keith Olbermann let him have it, as far as I'm concerned, right between the eyes on this one. Well, there we go.
And before we go over to Huckabee headquarters, I can't let the moment pass. I have to ask you this. Juxtaposition. You said that the Clintons are guilty of questioning how the game is played.
Right.
And then we went directly to an interview with Tom DeLay. I can't let that moment. And it's a rhetorical question, just an observation of the sequence of events there I found rather extraordinary.
Well, Tom's out of the game, and you might get more attitude out of the guy who's out of the game. He's not being careful.
On occasion in his past, he was known, though, for questioning the rules of the game.
Yeah, well, you know, when they had redistricting middle of a decade, and rather than waiting to the end of it. You've got a strong memory, sir.
I think a lot of Texans have that same memory.
Thank you, Keith. Thank you very, very much. Absolutely made Matthews look like a fool. He was talking and deriding the Clintons for talking about the rules of the game, and then he has Tom DeLay on there, a man who actually forcefully changed the game in midstream with the redistricting in Texas. He thought we all forgot about that. He assumed Keith Olbermann forgot about it. He's intellectually terribly overmatched by Keith Olbermann. He knows it. We know it. Everybody knows it. And I think he was extremely embarrassed by Keith's reference to that. And thank you, Keith. Thank you very, very much. I did love that one a lot. I really did. Well, we're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a minute, so don't go away.
In the sand at sunset. Well, she's a type pulled down on the 405. She'll take you higher than humble sky. She's an earthquake. And you're the fall.
salt land. So when you feel the ground start moving around, hold on tight, you're in for a ride. 'Cause she's so California, she's a wildfire out of control, headed for you. So when you get burned, don't say I didn't warn you, 'cause she's so California. She's a black Mercedes on Laurel and Vine. She's a low-cut dress, she's a Hollywood sign. She's a deadhead on a Friday night. So cool, breaking all the rules, rising star, she'll break your heart. 'Cause she's so California, she's a wildfire out of control, headed for you. So when you get burned, don't say I didn't warn you, 'cause she's so California.
The usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius, maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Interesting conversation taking place on the Head On Radio Network chat room. All of you folks listening on iTunes or other Democrats.com or other places, be sure and head on over to the Head On Radio Network chat room, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and sign up. It only takes a moment. They won't be calling you with any solicitations, anything like that. They don't sell them. Sign up and get involved in the chat room. Take a look at the whole lineup here on the Head On Radio Network. Going to find great programs on here. And it's good to know you're listening. Hey, how many of you ever listen to C-SPAN in the morning? I get up early, very early. And you know, I've got coffee and I'm working in the studio and everything, and I usually go down and watch in the lobby area, watch TV for a half hour or so to watch C-SPAN and in the morning and during their call-in show. And the reason I do it is not for education. I do it for entertainment. Did you ever listen to C-SPAN in the morning when they take the live calls? I mean, they've got three lines. You know what I'm talking about? They got the Democratic line, the Republican line, and the Independent line. And man, how shockingly, and I say this as a compliment to my audience, okay? I know what all of you are like. The guys and gals that listen to my show, I get such fabulous email and phone calls from people with great probing questions. I love it when, you know, we get the very interesting calls and the interesting emails, and just fascinating to me how involved everybody is in the political scene here in America and how educated you are. But the C-SPAN people, like I said, they just appear to be shockingly stupid sometimes and uninformed, and I'm sorry, and that's not all of them, but just this morning, I heard a woman, you know, and she I had to go change my shirt because of this one, because the coffee went whew. Just this morning, I heard a woman call and really chastise C-SPAN because they're talking about Romney being a Mormon and about Huckabee being a Christian and all that. But then she said they haven't said a word about that Obama being a Muslim. Nice, huh? I hear another guy talking about how when Hillary was first lady that she'd violated federal law. He's a very, very intelligent guy he's coming across, and he's telling the whole audience on C-SPAN, well, you know that Hillary Clinton, she violated federal law by giving advice to her husband, something about a federal anti-nepotism law. And if a woman violated federal law while the first lady, how on earth could we ever trust her enough to be president of the United States? So I say all this, you know, and by the way, I tried to find evidence of such a federal law, anti-nepotism law, but I couldn't. There are several states that have anti-nepotism laws in the book, but it has to do with hiring and so forth, not taking advice from your spouse if you happen to be the governor and the first lady of your state wants to discuss something with you if you happen to be president of the United States. So I don't know what the hell he was talking about, but once again, I only bring this up to compliment my audience for all the great phone calls and all the really good email that I get from you. And I'm going to let you know about a couple of letters I got in just a minute. But how many of the speeches did you see last night? You know, I watched Bush doing his pathetic little speeches now for how long? What, 7 years? Butchered the English language. And, you know, we had McCain giving his speech last night. Such a disappointment that a man with his experience and so forth can't talk any better than he does. But he doesn't. And it's obvious that he was reading his speech right off of a teleprompter. And he does. Someone mentioned to me earlier today in an email, said, you know, he acts like an old school teacher reading a storybook to an elementary school class. Well, I think so. And Hillary gave a really fine speech, I thought. Maybe she's learning something. Maybe she's learning to cast away the normal campaigning style and speak from the heart. That could be. She might be learning that. And if it is, that's a good thing. And but anyway, she got into her speech and she did it with feeling, and Edwards delivered a speech from his head and from his heart like only he can. Some people say that's because he was a trial lawyer that he's so good at this and everything, but he was great. He was great. He always is. I love the guy. How can you not love John Edwards? I do. There's just something about him that's very special. I've met John Edwards, and he's a terrific guy. You know, I noticed that many of these calls, and I know here comes the email again, and so forth. But many of these calls I was talking about on C-SPAN seem to come from folks with a slight accent, if you know what I mean. Nah, don't get your panties in a bunch over this. You do know what I mean, and I'm not vilifying everybody, certainly. But I've lived in the South for over a decade now, and actually some of the other states in the neighborhood don't consider Florida as the South, and maybe they're right. But I'm in Southwest Florida, and we certainly have our share of crackers and rednecks, and this whole area is redder than red, and I don't know who's going to win the Republican primary here, but it's going to be interesting. It really is. And if you've seen the polls lately, Giuliani not so long ago had a huge lead here in Florida amongst the Republicans, and he's dropped out of the huge lead he had here. But, hey, let's face it, that wasn't predictable, wasn't it? I think even Giuliani's own mother would have to throw him out of the house just a short while after hearing him say 9-11, 9-11, 9-11 a thousand times a day. I'm certainly certain of that. And like I said, I don't know who will get the nod from the Republicans in this state, but one thing that's become very obvious in the past month or so is that Ron Paul is gaining traction amongst the rednecks that live here. And now, I'm not saying that Paul will win the nomination or anything close to that, but he's getting some attention from the pick-em-up truck crowd. You know what I'm talking about? The guys with the big tires that sits 6 feet off the ground. You need a ladder to get into it and got the stars and bars flying from a big-ass flag in the bed of the truck. That group. They amuse me. There's something about that group that just stands out from everybody else. They really do. They just got a big old FU for everybody and anything that's not country fried redneck. They do. And you can just bet when you see one of those trucks coming down a road pulling a big old fishing boat twice the size of the truck and with the stars and bars flying in the wind that you've got a Ron Paul libertarian type driving that truck. And they'll all tell you, every one of them will tell you, they hate Democrats and they vote Republicans, but they are libertarians. And they, I get a kick out of them, really. They moan and they bitch about taxes. They're warmongers, every single one of them, except they're not in the service. They hate anything that's not Southern, particularly Northerners. And let me give you a little example of that. Right after moving here, I remember being asked by a policeman I happened to be talking to, after actually a sheriff's deputy, stopped to ask some directions. And he asked me, unsolicited, he asked me, I had Ohio plates on my car still, and he asked me if I was a Yankee or a damn Yankee. Now, maybe some of you have fallen for this and know what it is about, but I didn't know. And so, like an idiot, I asked, what's the difference? And he replied to me that a Yankee is a northerner who comes from the south, comes south for a visit. And that's reasonable enough. And then he let me know that a damn Yankee is a northerner who comes to the South and stays. Welcome to redneck America, I thought. And man, it's oh so true. People that think Florida is just full of nothing but people from the North, oh no, 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 no. I mean, there are plenty of northerners here, but the crackers are around. So, that makes me real popular with them. They're probably outside with them pick-em-up trucks right now, getting them their shotguns out. But politically, you might as well argue with a fence post, because they'll never listen to reason, and they'll just straight up tell you that they don't want to spend a damn dime to help anybody anywhere. I don't care what, because it always says, well, it ain't my problem. Got to, the old pull yourself up with your bootstraps like I did. And I'm looking at somebody with a, looks like Larry the Cable Man with a shirt with the arms ripped off of it. And that's what you're looking at. You got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And, in many cases, these guys don't even have any bootstraps. They're long gone. Their dog chewed them off. But as I was saying, there are Ron Paul signs everywhere around here. And of course they won't vote for Romney. Of course they won't vote for McCain. And Rudy is a northerner. And that doesn't leave anybody for him except good old Fred Thompson. He's right up their alley. But, he might not be in the race by the time January 29 rolls around. So who knows? Maybe old Ron Paul will do better than those other guys. You just... How'd you like to see How'd you like to see a convention? And I don't want to belabor the point, and some of you reminded me that I have, but I'll just finish the thought. How'd you like to go to some sort of a convention, a libertarian convention? First of all, that scares the hell out of me, going to a libertarian convention. And secondly, Ron Paul be the leader of this convention. Yeah, it'd be quite a group, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be just quite a group? And while I'm on the subject of the South, and as far as I'm concerned, the most southern place in America is South Carolina. We've got the primary coming up there. And I see already they're at it with the dirty politics. Nobody does it any better than the folks in South Carolina, the Republicans in South Carolina. And, of course, they're spreading the emails around that Obama is a Muslim. Everybody knows Obama is a Muslim. And you know what's going to be next? Is Hillary a Wiccan? Edwards the father of some Muslim quintuplets, something like that? Ah, yeah. They'll get their licks in. But it seems that South Carolina always gets their licks in with the dirty politics. Man, do they ever. And how many of you know who Andrew Sullivan is? I'm sure a lot of you do. He's a professional Clinton hater. Man, he's a drunk, and so, oh, I'll get sued for that. And he's got to be drinking heavily today because guys like Andrew Sullivan and his ilk probably got sore elbows from spending too much time at the bar today. Man, oh, man, oh, man. And going on a little further to talk about Tweety, that I affectionately call Chris Matthews. Did you see that little exchange between him and Tom Brokaw last night? I think it was slap down Chris Matthews night. So at night, Rachel Maddow got him, and then Keith Olbermann got him. And then Tom Brokaw, I thought, really, really put him down. And I don't know whether, I mean, Matthews is a smart guy, and I hope he realized what Brokaw was doing to him. And I just, I couldn't find the audio on this. The audio link on it was broken, so let me read you the exact transcript. Brokaw says, "You know what I think we're going to have to do?" And Matthews says, "Yes, sir." Brokaw says, "Wait for the voters to make their judgment." This is in the midst of what's going to happen last night. And Matthews said, "Well, what do we do then in the days before the ballot? We must stay home, I guess." Brokaw says, no, we don't stay home. There are reasons to analyze what they're saying. We know from how the people voted today what moved them to vote. You can take a look at that. There are a lot of issues that have not been fully explored during all this, but we don't have to get in the business of making judgments before the polls have closed and trying to stampede and affect the process. Look, he says, Brokaw said, "I'm not picking on us. It's part of the culture in which we live these days. I think that the people out there are going to begin to make judgments about us if we don't begin to temper that temptation to constantly try to get ahead of what the voters are deciding. In many cases, as we learned in New Hampshire, when they went into the polling booth today, or at least in the last 3 days, they were making decisions very, very late." But Brokaw, I thought, really, really put Tweety Bird in his place. And I guess everybody that talked to him did last night. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to give us a call here on the Guy James Show, we'd love to hear from you. I see that, and I found this odd, looking around at political news today, Mitt Romney, his ads in South Carolina and Florida, he didn't renew them, and he's been running tons of them. I can tell you here where I live, that tons of Romney ads, and he didn't renew them. Is it money? Certainly not from Romney. Does he think he's done for? I don't know. I just found that interesting. And the other question is, as far as money's concerned, how much of an effect is that going to have on the Democratic primary? We've got Obama, who evidently has got quite a war chest, and Hillary does too. So will one of them be able to outspend the other? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens in that respect. Both of them, according to all everything we've seen, have raised at least $100 million. And man, that's not hay. $100 million. Incredible amount of money to raise for a race, and it's just imagine what they'll raise for the general election. Amazing. Hey, we'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for.
Local government, and who is unconcerned with the taxpayers' dollar, then the record of this party and its members demonstrate that we are not that kind of liberal. But if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights and their civil liberties, someone who believes that we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
Mm-hmm.
the late, great John Fitzgerald Kennedy. You want to talk about inspiration? There was a man who could inspire a rock. There's a man who did inspire millions upon millions of people, young people, to rise up and work for their country, the Peace Corps. So many great things that John F. Kennedy was involved in and responsible for, but moreover, the most important thing that he did was inspire this country and inspire a lot of people to greatness. How many people have you heard over the years to say, well, I was inspired by President Kennedy? And history has been, somewhat neutral on President Kennedy's term in office. But I always say the thing he did was give this country hope again after being in a malaise, you might say, for 8 years or so. And that's, I'm not saying the Eisenhower years were bad. I'm not saying that. We were at a peaceful time, although the Cold War was getting a good start. It's just every once in a while you need a great leader to come forth. And I know this is a great country of individualists. I'm very much an individualist myself. But, damn, I like looking up and seeing a leader that says, come on, follow me. And you look into his eyes and you know that he means it. And you know that he'll follow through. And you know that he's got the interest of the country at heart, first and foremost. And we have been searching for somebody like that ever since the Kennedy era. I have, anyway. I was so inspired by John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And, don't give me the crap about Marilyn Monroe and all that. Forget that. History will show that John F. Kennedy was a very inspirational leader, and he came along at the right time for this country. And, the old Camelot story, it's true. Once again, here we had a country, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, and we'll put a man on the moon. The vision the man had, the tremendous vision he had, and like in many ways, like several other Democrats that come down the line, he was hated. He was despised by people on the right. And why? Why? I wonder to this day. I do. I'm not one of these people who are into these conspiracy theories, but I do wonder to this day why John F. Kennedy went to Dallas, Texas on that fateful day when he knew the mood there was ugly and angry. He knew it was. And he went anyway. Sad time, that fateful day in Dallas. I was there not so long ago. And, well, I won't get started in talking about that. I told you I'd mention a couple of letters that I got today, some email, and always glad to hear from all of you. I do want to ask you, I'm all over the place today here, but I do want to ask your advice on something as a listening audience, and I hope you'll provide what I need here in the way of advice. Normal everyday listeners, we've done a segment on this show for almost 5 years called A Few Minutes of Republican Love, where we read the not-so-kind letters that we get from some of our conservative listeners, who, by the way, have dropped off considerably. I don't know why, but they have. Well, I think I do know why. I think they're somewhat disheartened. But we've read the more vitriolic ones on the show for periodically over the years, and some people seem to enjoy them immensely. But the last two or three times that I've done that, and I give warnings that I'm going to read these and that they're not so nice and maybe you ought to get the kids out of the room. But the last two or three times I've done this, I've received some mail from some of you that said that you were highly offended that I would read such language on the air, and I try and edit them as much as I can, but they lose their flavor if you completely edit them. And so what is it? Are you in favor of that, reading the pure hatred from the right? Or should I edit it? Well, it's one of those things you edit it too much, and they just don't mean anything anymore. Or should I just forget it? And I have let it lay for a while. We have a stack of Republican love letters here that, well, they're a little nasty. I mean, there isn't any doubt about it. So I'm asking you, my, you know, since we don't, we can't afford focus groups and so forth for the show, what's your opinion on it? Do you like the Republican love segment, or should we just let, so to speak, sleeping dogs lie and let the utter contempt and hatred from the right just kind of drift away here? Let me know. Send me an email, guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com. Love to hear from you. 866-546-5254. But I did want to read a couple of notes that I got from listeners. Where are we at here? What did I do with them? Oh, here we are. Hi, Guy. I was a bit surprised at the outcome of New Hampshire. I wanted to email you before all the pundits get a chance to speak about all this. A couple of things to look for. It won't be long before someone, whether it be Obama's campaign or a group that supports Obama, that will come out and promote the idea that white America got scared by Obama and went out and voted for Hillary. Hillary is going to unleash a lot of, quote, stuff on Obama to try and goose him out. In an effort to combat Hillary's attacks, Obama will announce that Edwards has joined his team and agreed to be his vice presidential choice. Glad you're back, Guy, your conservative friend, Mike. Well, we shall see if any of that comes to pass. And what else we got here? We got another one for the last week. Let's see if I got this right. Okay, here we go. For the last week, the Republican-controlled news media has been doing everything they can to stop Hillary from being president. Nobody likes Hillary. Bush, Clinton. Hillary Clinton in meltdown as panic grips the staff. Talk of Clinton dropping out engulfs the campaign. Hillary Clinton braced for a second defeat at the hands of Obama. Drudge, Hillary preparing to drop out. No one even mentioned the possibility that Hillary might win. 100% of them got it wrong. But in spite of all of that slanted reporting, the people of New Hampshire who live in the real world voted to give the night to Hillary. New Hampshire, like America, likes Hillary. And that's from my friend Mark Perkle. And went on to say, tonight Hillary not only defeated Obama, she defeated the news media. And even though they were kicking her when she was down, Hillary has shown that she has the strength to win. And if she has that kind of strength, it can only make me hope that those rich media types are going to have to pay their share of taxes. For the last week, the media has been laughing at her, but tonight, as the old saying goes, she who laughs last, laughs best. In spite of what the media pundits say, I'm betting Hillary is not going to drop out of the race tomorrow. And again, that's from Mark. Gee whiz, where's the first hour gone here already? We're coming up to news time in just a couple of minutes. Don't know why the time's slipping away so fast. Do you have times like that when you just, poof, it's gone? One more letter. We got time for one more. Guy, you know you were right, and you heard me bitching about funding yesterday and everything. This is concerning this. This is from John. He said, Guy, you know you were right about how you said that they're going to go after Obama if Hillary was out. I was driving yesterday and tuned into Hannity's Insanity Show to see what he was saying, and he thought Hillary wasn't going to win, and he said, if she gets beat tonight, we're going to start the Stop Obama Express. There's a lot about this guy American doesn't know. End quote. John goes on to say, I saw Fox this afternoon, and they brought in a body language specialist to analyze Hillary Clinton from last night, her emotional moment, and her loss in Iowa. Now, why do they not do this to a single other candidate? I'd like to see them analyze Thompson when he refused to put on a fireman's hat, and when they ask him how he intends to be competitive in New Hampshire, and he simply replied, I don't. That's from John. John, thank you very much. I remember that. How do you intend to be competitive in New Hampshire? And he replied, I don't. They were so right about Fred Thompson. They were so right about him. He's got to be the laziest politician there ever was. And Giuliani, you know, he said he showed up in New Hampshire yesterday. And the only reason he showed up in New Hampshire yesterday was to try and get a few more votes so he wouldn't be embarrassed and be behind Ron Paul, because Ron Paul nearly beat him yesterday. So, Rudy, the ship's going down. We'll be back right after the news. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
In Nepal, 2,000 pro-royal demonstrators massed in the first major protest against the decision by Parliament to abolish the monarchy and create a republic, one of the key demands of former Maoist rebels. Two U.S. Navy fighter jets plunged into the Persian Gulf Monday after what initial reports suggest was a mid-air collision. Desperate for a Gulf of Tonkin-style incident to justify an attack on Iran, the Pentagon is claiming Iranian naval boats in the Strait of Hormuz this weekend had hostile intent. But the commander of the Guard's naval forces said, quote, "What happened between the Guards and foreign vessels was an ordinary identification."
Top of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
Political analyst Michael Chosudovsky says the assassination of Benazir Bhutto was anticipated by U.S. officials. Dr. Chosudovsky, director of the Center for Research on Globalization, says it has been known for months that the Bush-Cheney administration has been maneuvering to strengthen their political control of Pakistan, paving the way for expansion of the war on terrorism. Chosudovsky says American destabilization plans propose the toppling of Pakistan's military. Chosudovsky says Pakistan's current political impasse is deliberate. It is part of U.S. foreign policy, which favors disruption and disarray in the structures of the Pakistani state. Indirect rule by the Pakistani military and intelligence apparatus will be replaced by more direct forms of U.S. interference, including greater U.S. military presence in Pakistan. According to a survey released Tuesday, nearly half of U.S. diplomats unwilling to volunteer to work in Iraq say one reason for their refusal is they don't agree with the Bush administration's policies. The survey, conducted by the American Foreign Service Association, the union that represents U.S. diplomats, said security concerns and separation from family ranked as the top reason for not wanting to serve in Iraq. But 48% cited disagreement with the administration policy as a factor in their opposition. In addition, nearly 70% of U.S. diplomats surveyed oppose forced assignments to Iraq. Last year, the State Department announced it might require forced assignments under penalty of dismissal. The results suggest the State Department may be facing a far more serious revolt over Iraq than previously thought and call into question its ability to fully staff diplomatic missions in Iraq.
This is Pete Seeger. What country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions. Fortunately, our Constitution has a remedy. It's called impeachment. Ask your Congress member to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back to the Guy James Show. I'm in a jolly mood right now. I was reading some email during the news of the break, and my, there's some good stuff in there. Thank you. Thank you for sending it. I am quite entertained by some of you. I really am. One of the really good ones here. I can always count on John from Cape Coral to write something, you know, when I was talking. And maybe one of you techies can explain to me, why does John's email take almost an hour to come over the internet to the show? Anybody know the answer to that? I noticed the same thing yesterday. Maybe the clock's off in his. I don't know. I don't understand such things. But anyway, I noticed this was sent around 3:10 p.m. when I was talking about whether or not Newt Gingrich might join the race. You remember that? To those of you listening for the second hour, didn't hear the first. I'd mentioned that hell, everybody else has tried it for the Republicans. Why don't maybe Newty will come riding in on his big white horse and try and snatch up all the conservatives to vote for him? And John writes, "Good afternoon, Guy. Maybe Duke Cunningham and Bob Nay can join the Newt in the running when they run out of everybody else." Well, Duke Cunningham and Bob Nay. Yeah. The prez and the vice prez right there. Man, oh man. What a crew. Thanks, John. Thanks for sending that. That's highly entertaining. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. I have noticed in the last hour or so, the old stock market went berserk. It went up around 150 points, 148 points. When I first tuned in this afternoon, it was down, it was down about 70 points, I believe. And who knows what goes on in Wall Street? It's kind of magic, isn't it? I was down on Wall Street recently in my little trip to the Big Apple here about a month ago. Month tomorrow already? My, oh my, where does the time go? And walked up to that big old bull standing there on Wall Street, and, you know, I looked around and I thought, you know, what really goes on here? Oh, wait a minute. At 4:02, the Dow was up 148 points. At 4:07, it's up only 23 points. Maybe this ticker isn't exactly right. I don't know. By the way, speaking of financial matters, did you see that Bank America, you know, they put $2 billion into Countrywide here a short time ago, last year, and everybody thought, what a great deal. They had this deal with Countrywide, $2 billion, and now that stock is down to worth only about $500 million. So Bank of America has lost almost $2 billion on it, something like that. Oh, and thanks, thanks, Mike, for letting me know, but I'd ask about the time on the computer. Such is not the case. The gentleman that sent me this is right here, not 5 miles from where the studio is, so we're in the same time zone. So You're going to have to get your techie book back out and let me know what happened there. We've been talking. Oh, I got this note, too, sent to me. Don't forget that the Right Reverend Pat Robertson, you know, Pat's always good for a laugh, isn't he? Says he talked to God again, and God told him who's going to win the presidency, but he's not telling, you know. So, well, I'm sure if you send him like $100, Pat will tell you who God said will be our next commander-in-chief, and he's not going to give that information out for free. Of course, I should mention this is the same guy who said Katrina was punishment from God for bad human behavior. I've often wondered if God told Pat Robertson ahead of time about Katrina like he did, like he told Noah about the Great Flood. Does Pat have that much influence? What a geek. What a geek, Pat Robertson. Mike writes back, referring to my matter about the time on the email. He says, well, then it's a... it's a conspiracy. There you go. The NSA is watching. John, the NSA is watching our email back and forth. John suggested that the other day. The NSA is on it. Hang on a minute till I open the curtains here on the studio window and wave to them. It maybe got to be one of those black vans sitting out front, right? Got to be. With a little antenna sitting on the side of it there. Hello, all you guys out there from the NSA. Good to have you with us this afternoon. Thanks for listening. I jest, of course. Join us here in the program this afternoon, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. And I've been talking today about the hatred toward Hillary. And I want to make it perfectly clear to you, I don't care if it's Hillary, I don't care if it's Obama, I don't care if it's any single one, Edwards, any of the Democratic candidates, to talk about one of the candidates like they've talked about Hillary. Doesn't make any difference which one of them it is. It just happens that it's Hillary that they've been doing this to. I think is just hideous what they've been doing. And I found what I think is the best example, the most egregious example of hatred that I think I've ever seen from people on TV. And, of course, I'm talking about none other than the Hannity and Colm show and Dick Morris and Laura Ingraham. And they claimed Clinton's expression of emotion raises questions about her national security credentials. And I think this is one of the more absurd, ugly things that I have ever seen by anybody in the media. And I got this off of Media Matters, by the way. And there's a little summary here. So it says, while discussing Senator Hillary Clinton's emotional response to a question, Dick Morris, who I think is aptly named, but here's a man who's got a hell of a lot of nerve talking about anybody. And Fox News, by the way, has got a hell of a lot of nerve having a scoundrel like Dick Morris on their program, even. But, you know, as long as he'll say something filthy about the Clintons or any of the Democrats, he's more than welcome on Fox News Network. And anyway, Morris stated on Hannity and Combs, and let me quote him, he said, I believe there could well come a time when there's such a serious threat to the United States that she breaks down like that, Morris added. She's talking about Hillary and her tears. I don't think she ought to be president. And on Fox and Friends, my God, do people actually watch that show? I watched a little bit of it by accident one morning and thought, oh, my God, people watch this and take these freaks seriously? Laura Ingraham on Fox and Friends similarly asserted, remember, we have Islamic jihadist Osama bin Laden, Mullah Omar, and all those other freaks that want to come to the United States and wreak havoc upon our population. We can't have people who break down and start crying at the most difficult moments, end quote. You bitch. Laura Ingraham. On the 7th of January edition of Fox News, Hannity and Combs while discussing Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's comments during a January 7th campaign event in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, in which her voice broke when she responded to a question. And I'm sure almost all of you have seen this by now. This was not exactly a case when she was doing any boo-hoo-hoo. It's just that she was tired, she is worn out, her emotions got to her, and she teared up a little bit. There were no tears running down her cheeks, nothing like that. This woman did not have an emotional breakdown of any sort whatsoever, but the Republicans would have you think that she did, that she started sobbing or something. That's the insinuation here. And Morris stated, I believe there could well come a time when there's such a serious threat to the United States that she breaks down like that. I don't think she ought to be the president. And Laura Ingraham said, one thing about this weeping episode, and again, once any of you saw this, you know damn well this wasn't a weeping episode. Laura Ingraham said, I actually felt sorry for her for that moment. But remember, we have Islamic jihadists. We can't have people who break down and start crying at the most difficult moments. I mean, come on. This is big time. She's in the big time, Ingraham went on to say. Come on, this is the big leagues. You can't start crying because you're behind. I mean, welcome to politics. You bitch. I have such contempt for Laura Ingraham. And Dick Morris. Now, the odd part about all this is, and I'm looking for my notes on this, Romney became emotional during his December 6, 2007 speech about faith and politics. The Boston Globe even wrote Romney had another teary moment, further noting that on December 17th, in a campaign event, his eyes filled with tears for the third time in as many weeks on his presidential campaign. That's okay, isn't it? Isn't it okay to have human emotions? And nor did the Fox News host ask Ingraham whether President Bush's emotional moments make him unfit for the presidency. Think Progress, the blog, noted, news outlets have repeatedly reported Bush's tears. An April 2002 Newsweek article reported, the president is tremendously sentimental. Forget about putting his parents anywhere near him. At his inauguration, he purposely kept them out of his line of sight so he could stay as dry-eyed as possible. He has learned not to brush the tears away. And another article, January 12, 2007, the Washington Post reported, the pictures were just what the White House wanted, a teary-eyed President Bush presenting the Medal of Honor posthumously to a slain war hero. And from the January 8th edition of Fox News and Friends, Ducey, this Ducey character, have you seen him? Have you seen this Ducey character? He says, hey, Susan, let me ask you about something that happened here on the trail yesterday. Hillary Clinton was at a diner. She was around a big table, and somebody said, you know, you've been on the campaign trail for so long. You still look good. How do you do it? And then she welled up. And people are making a lot of the tears or near tears. And, in fact, I'd say 30 to 40% of our emailers think she was faking it. And Susan Estrich on the columnist said on the Fox News, said, well, two things. First of all, I've known Hillary Clinton for a long time. I've watched the whole 2 minutes of tape. I don't think she was faking it. And let me tell you something. I've been around Hillary Clinton, as I mentioned to you yesterday. I've spoken with her, sat beside her at dinner twice, and talked with her throughout the dinner, and found that she's very warm, very cordial, very polite, very well-mannered, very engaging woman. And regardless of what you think of her policies, regardless of what you think of Bill, nobody deserves this. And it's just a flat-out assassination attempt, by these people who hate Hillary Clinton, who hate Bill Clinton. You know, it was brought up in the Hannity and Combs about George Bush 1 crying when he was talking at that dinner here a while back. And Moore says, well, he's 80 years old. Let's be clear here. He's also a man. That's what some of this is about. Misogynistic comments. I hate it. I really do. 866-546-5254. Some of our Republican love comments. We got one here from Kelly. The Kelly says, I love Republican love. It's just too funny. There's another one from Mark. He said, I love Republican love. It's some of the funniest damn crap I've ever heard. As for the language, it's part of the creative license provided to you as an internet broadcaster. Mark in Indiana. Thank you, Mark. And we've got a few more, so we'll take that under advisement, as they say. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the show, and we hope you do today. I wanted to change the subject just for a moment, if I might. And before I do that, let's just finish this up about the primary last night. The good folks over at Crooks and Liars, when asked about the primary last night, Hillary Clinton, what Clinton fans are saying, hello to the new comeback kid, what Clinton critics are saying, if she hadn't cried the other day, none of this would happen. Who's right? Well, it's probably too soon to tell. The New Hampshire victory was incredibly impressive and arguably makes her the front runner, if there is such a thing, for the nomination going forward. Will she get a post-New Hampshire bump in the polls? Probably, but we don't yet know how big and whether it will help in Nevada or South Carolina. Concerning Barack Obama, what Obama fans are saying, one out of two isn't bad, and New Hampshire has always been Clinton's strongest state. Obama's critics are saying, weren't you guys up by double digits on Monday? Who's right? Probably both of them. A close second-place finish is disappointing after all the press for the Obama camp, but the senator remains in pretty doggone good shape there. And he's in a great position to characterize this as a two-person race. John Edwards. Edward fans are saying we did better than the fourth-place finish 4 years ago. And, of course, Edwards' critics are saying it's a two-person race and Edwards isn't one of the two. Who's right? Sadly, probably the critics. An Obama win would have been far better for Edwards. Edwards is in a tough spot right now, isn't he? I love the guy. Going to hate it when he drops. I has to drop out of the race. I think he's a tremendous individual. I really do. And some of the headlines, once again... just to show you how the news media has treated some of this, the New York Times, instead of Hillary Clinton wins, it's not Hillary. It says, Clinton escapes to fight another day. Mm-hmm. Escapes. Well. And one thing to be cognizant of here is, do remember this, that this is a fight for delegates. And you should know that although Hillary won the popular vote last night in New Hampshire, actually she and Obama tied for the delegates. And what is it? They each ended up with 9 delegates, and John Edwards got 4. So if you take a look at the national scorecard, Obama is in the lead with 25 delegates, and Clinton has 24. So, delegate-wise, the race last night was a tie. But do remember this, when it comes to delegates, including the superdelegates in the whole country, and we'll explain this superdelegate thing for another time, but including all of them, the superdelegates who are committed right now to one candidate or another in the states that have had their primary, their caucus already, Hillary Clinton has 187. 187, and Obama 89, and Edwards 50. So something else to keep in mind there. And it was interesting to see last night who actually voted. Obama, with the men, had a significant margin over Hillary Clinton. And amongst young voters, 18 to 24, he had an advantage. People making more than $50,000 goes to Obama. The voters with postgraduate education, the professional people, in other words, went for Obama and the independents. And the first-time voters and the voters without any religious affiliation and single men and voters who said they were getting ahead financially, all those people went for Obama. And Hillary's group last night were women, big-time vote for women, particularly married women, over 40, voters making less than $50,000, voters without a college degree, union voters, Democratic Catholics, which is a very important constituency for the Democrats, and people who are very worried about the economy, and voters who thought the economy was the most important issue. These are the people who went for Hillary Clinton. So quite a difference there in the two camps. You know, the good thing is all those people are going to vote together in the general election in the fall. Now we're having our little fight that we have. And come fall, it's going to be all the Democrats, and a great thing once again is the turnout. It's just the best news is the turnout for this whole thing. An incredible turnout once again for Democrats. Young Democrats really showed up this time. The highest percentage of young Democrats they've ever had in New Hampshire. That's wonderful news. Absolutely wonderful news for the Democratic Party. I think the more we look at this, the more we can see that it's just going to, I think we're heading in for a romp. Yes, I really do. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here on the program. I apologize for a little bit of technical trouble we've had today, but I think we've got it, straightened out. Pretty sure we do. So we're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. And out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Yeah, I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Come on the peace train. Get peace train holy roller.
Everyone jump on the peace train.
your good friends too. Cause it's getting nearer. It's a look of me with you. Come and join the living. It's not the fault of you. And it's getting nearer. Soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Peace train, take this country. Come take me home again. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
I don't know where ELO on the chat room gets those graphics, those little animatronic, whatever you call them, little motion dancers on there, but that's hilarious. If you're listening someplace else besides the Head On Radio Network, head on over to the Head On Radio Network chat room. You'll find some nice folks in there. I'm in there. I think I see Bob Kincaid's in there right now, ELO, Rosie Noel, Lemon314, Powerpuff, Ray. They're all there. And Ray, thank you for the nice note I got from you last night. Appreciate it very, very much. 866-546-5254. You know, one thing I've been meaning to talk about for a little while now is where we're at in America and why this election is so very important, so vital to the future of this country. And I've been thinking a lot about it, and I mentioned to you earlier today that, and always on the program, I live here in Southwest Florida, It's a place where, and many of you have visited here, it's a place where the four seasons are not blatantly distinguishable from one another. And to be sure, there's a slight difference between fall and winter and spring, and a somewhat greater disparity between those three in summer. It's hot here in the summer. But there isn't a marked difference in the seasons like there was when I grew up in rural Ohio. And in a way, and if you think about it, I think America has experienced the four seasons. And kind of a little analogy that I came up with, and allow me to explain what I mean. When I was a youngster back in the Buckeye State of Ohio, spring, and I'm a rural guy, so, you know, farming and all that, spring was a time for renewal. And it was time to go out and till the soil and plant new crops and, you know, experience the wonder of Mother Nature's flowers blooming for the first time in the new year, the tulips coming up and the crocuses and all that. You know, the air was fresh and the gentle rains came and nurtured the new crops, and you'd see the corn and the soybeans sprouting out of the ground. And there was always a sense of a new beginning. And so it was with our country. And when we defeated the British, this new freshly spawned nation started blossoming into something wonderful for its citizens. And the new democracy was sprouting, and it was starting to flourish, and freedom was in the air, and the birth of this new country was an event that, well, in time, it would change the entire world for the better. And springtime for America was a wonderful and exciting time for those who had helped bring her into existence, the signers and the fathers. What a wonderful time it was for this nation. What an excitement there must have been in Philadelphia, you know? And then came summer in America. And that's a time, if you look back through history, that's when she began to mature. And she was basking in the glow of the summer sun rays, and on the world stage she was beginning to be noticed a little bit, and perhaps a future force to be reckoned with, both economically and militarily at the time. And the USA, you know, she was gaining notice by expanding her territory and coming of age by understanding that awful practices such as slavery couldn't be tolerated by a decent and a free society. And America was growing strong during this time, and she was beginning to be known as a source and a haven of precious freedom for anyone who came to her shores. And that's when America started welcoming the multitudes, Lady Liberty, that came through Ellis Island to gain the freedom and the prosperity and the security necessary for their families to live out their dreams. And people from many nations came to us with great expectations and dreams that were eventually fulfilled, even though many of them were resented and resisted by those who were already established here and didn't want to share the dream. We're seeing some of that now, again. But despite the resentment and the efforts to keep the new immigrants out, the American dream was born for many millions, and those millions helped lay the building blocks of what was to become, I think, the greatest, most powerful nation Earth has ever known. And summertime for America was when she grew from infancy to adolescence. And then along came autumn. And I think this was America's greatest season. The Industrial Revolution gave us some really great innovation and production capacity like nobody in the world had ever known before. And this was a time when our nation became aware of just how great she could be, both domestically and on the world stage as well. And this is when the magnitude of her achievements became known to everybody. And this is when she could flex her muscles and help out other nations in time of trouble, both militarily and financially. And this is when she could stand up for democracy and freedom all around the world. And to be sure, this was not a perfect time. Certainly not. Bigotry and hatred remained a huge problem in this country, and poverty reared its ugly head in a lot of areas of the country. And it's also a time when the smokestacks of our factories began belching out harmful chemicals and without regard to the well-being of our citizens and the good Mother Earth. And there was a resistance to a fair wage, and it was mounted by the wealthy capitalist who viewed the American laborers only as a means to make money and not as someone who deserved an honest day's pay for their hard work. And sweatshops just abounded along with despicable child labor practices. Things weren't perfect by any means. But during this autumn season, America did indeed find greatness. And when our friends in Europe were faced with terrible danger during World War I, we went to their aid, and for the first time, we demonstrated that as a military power, we were second to none because of both our resolve and our newfound mighty industrial capacity. And Woodrow Wilson's presidency was the dawn of a new age for America as both a fierce warrior when necessary and a peacekeeper when needed. And time and again during America's autumn, we faced terrible danger. And time and again, we emerged victorious over whatever peril we faced. And both world wars were testimony to the fact that we were no longer followers of other nations, but indeed we became the leader, which the others followed, or at least respected, as a force to be dealt with. And in between the two world wars, we faced one of our greatest challenges as a nation, the Great Depression, which lasted from 1929 until around 1940, what was a time perhaps like no other time in our history. And we were challenged to preserve our way of life. And the national motto was temporarily changed from God Bless America to Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And the economic and social challenges faced in 1932 by incoming President Franklin Delano Roosevelt seemed to the average man absolutely insurmountable. But then Franklin Roosevelt was no average man. He was truly a man for the ages, a man with a vision, a man with a plan and a resolve to follow that plan, no matter how much resistance or criticism he faced, and there was much criticism. And for Roosevelt believed in the greatness of America, and he believed that there was no mountain too high for this nation to climb, and despite having to fight a political war against the Republicans, who still to this day try to tear down and destroy his work. Despite all of that, he stayed the course, and he brought the United States through the Great Depression, and once again, having to fight against the Republicans who wanted to remain isolated, he pledged to help our friends in Europe vanquish what was known up until that time as the greatest military threat that the world had ever seen. Franklin Roosevelt kept this nation on track when she could so easily have fallen off of that track and become just another failed nation in world history. And it was during America's autumn that the great middle class began to emerge, and the labor movement was greatly responsible for their rise in stature. The labor unions rose to power, and at long last, the working men and women of this country had power. They no longer had to accept substandard wages from greedy employers, and they no longer had to live as the working poor. They could now afford the American dream, a home of their own, a car. They could send their kids to college, take a vacation. They could become independent, save for retirement. Life was good for them. And things weren't perfect during America's autumn. The Korean War, Vietnam, there was continuing racial strife, inner-city violence and riots. Things weren't perfect. They never are. I'm not exactly sure when America's winter really started. I believe it was during Ronald Reagan's first term. That's when the rich and the politically powerful began their campaign to reverse the upward mobility trend by the middle class. And that's when the conservative movement really got legs and started to work on destroying the unions and taking away any political clout the average voter might have had. Reagan's first term is when the current grab all you can get for yourself and screw everyone else mantra of today got started. And that's when the conservatives started their nonstop campaign against social liberals and began to demonize them 24/7 on the airwaves. The conservative think tanks gathered immense amounts of money and built their power in anticipation of completely overhauling the American way by seizing complete control of all the branches of government and changing them to their liking. And up until Clinton was elected to office, it was going very well for the conservatives. And, of course, the interruption of their schedule by Clinton didn't sit well with them. And Clinton paid the price. And they decided that he was in their way. And even before he took the oath of office, they decided that they'd get rid of him. Oh, and they tried, all right. They mounted a mighty effort to impeach and convict Clinton. And they would have gone ahead with their plan had they not discovered that the American public wasn't taking kindly to their public hanging of a very popular president. So they lay in waiting until Clinton was out of office. And they pounced, and they pulled off the theft of the Oval Office and put another Warren G. Harding type in the Oval Office. And Bush, even in the minds of many Republicans, was not the leader they needed, but he would do as long as they kept control. And installing a vice president such as Richard Cheney would certainly see that they did keep control. And over the next few years, incalculable damage was done to America's power and prestige around the world. Massive war spending led America from a surplus to a financial disaster. Hatred of America from her meddling in other countries' affairs became just rampant. And lies and distortions by the Bush administration to the citizens of the U.S. became commonplace. The large majority of Americans no longer trusted the government of their own country. We've had massive job movement to other countries cause the middle class to almost disappear. Debt and financial ruin is becoming commonplace for the working Americans. People who lost their jobs or had their mortgage payments drastically raised because of predatory lending practices are losing their homes, and many people are losing their hope for a future for them and their children. And America was at her low ebb. So, what awaits our nation now? Will we have another springtime? Will we have a renewal, a reemergence of hope and trust in the government, or will we enter a virtual ice age and watch America decline into obscurity, into ruin? What's it going to be? When I lived in rural Ohio, we spent our winters getting ready for springtime. We knew that eventually the snow and the cold and the ice and the gray skies and the blustery weather would give way to the gradually warm breezes of spring. And we spent our spare time out in the barns and the machine sheds getting the tractors and the plows and the equipment ready for another planting season. And we anticipated good times ahead, and we got ready for them. We wanted to be ready to hit the fields the moment the weather broke, so we could plant new crops. And with the help of good Mother Earth, enjoy another bountiful crop and a good harvest. And we never had doubts that would happen each and every spring. Farmers, you know, are the eternal optimist. But is America optimistic about her future now? Sadly, not from what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that we're nowhere near the bottom of this housing market. I'm hearing that there's no end in sight for this perpetual war Bush has mired us into. I'm hearing from all segments of society that the good jobs are gone forever, and the ruling class, the rich and the privileged, are getting even richer, while the common man is getting poorer by the day. Insurance benefits are disappearing rapidly. Pensions are becoming a thing of the past, while the great working class is slipping even deeper into debt and eventually into poverty. A nation that moved forward for 200 years is now moving backwards at a rapid pace. And we lack the leadership necessary to rally folks together and get back that great spirit and fortitude on which this nation was founded. So, like the farmers in the winter, will we get things ready for springtime? Or are we going to allow the tools and the machinery of our democracy to rust and gather dust? We didn't get to such a lofty place amongst the other nations of the world because as a people we're lazy and without vision. We didn't get to be the country half the world wanted to come to without having courage and a desire to be the very best. We did it once, and we can do it again. I guess the question is, will we stay in a perpetual winter season? Or will the warm breezes of springtime blow across this nation again, bringing a new awakening, a renewal, a rebirth of the once mightiest and greatest nation on earth? Or not? I wonder. Be happy to have you join us here on the program, 866-546-5254. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a moment.
So fast, just like a dream, we knew it couldn't last, but I'd do it all again if I could somehow. I must be leaving soon, it's your world now. Is run. I'm moving on like the setting sun. No sad goodbyes, no tears allowed. You'll be all right. It's your
ah. The Eagles, It's Your World Now. You know, the Eagles have got a new CD out. It's a double, and it's called Eagles Long Road Out of Eden, and it's the first one they've done in quite some time. And I saw the great interview with them a while back on the Tube, talking about, well, they'd rather come out with a great CD once every 10 years than put out crap every year. And I got to tell you, if you're an Eagles fan, and I am, this new one, Long Road Out of Eden, is a fabulous, fabulous and I know, you know, you don't have the familiarity with the songs that you do, but, you know, you got to start someplace with the good music. And let's face it, that one we just played, sweet, love it. So the Eagles, Long Road Out of Eden. How many of you know who Stephen Wright is? One of my very favorite comedians. To give you an idea of where my comedic interests go, Stephen Wright, Sam Kinison. Sam Kinison to me is the funniest man that ever lived, yeah, that's the kind of comedy I like. And Stephen Wright, you know who I'm talking about, many of you. Stephen Wright, the goofy looking guy with the wiry hair standing up on stage with that deadpan face of his. Someone sent me this, and I think it's just absolutely hilarious, the mind of Stephen Wright and some of the comments that he comes up with. And I thought I'd share a few of them with you. And it will give you some insight to where my mind goes for comedy. Stephen Wright said all of these, and they're all quotes from him. He said, I woke up one morning and all my stuff had been stolen and replaced by exact duplicates. I'd kill for a Nobel Peace Prize. Stephen Wright says, borrow money from pessimists. They don't expect it back. Half the people you know are below average. 99% of lawyers give the rest a bad name. 42.7% of all statistics are made up on the spot. A conscience is what hurts when all your other parts feel so good. And a clear conscience is usually the sign of a bad memory. Oh, how true. And all those who believe in psychokinesis, raise my hand. I particularly like that one. And the early bird may get the worm, but the second mouse gets the cheese. And more quotes from Stephen Wright. I almost had a psychic girlfriend, but she left me before we met. And okay, so what's the speed of dark? And that reminds me of one of the old ones. Stephen Wright is, if you were flying along, I heard this 30 years ago, I think 20 anyway. If you were flying along in a spacecraft, traveling at the speed of light, and you turned on the headlights, would anything happen? How do you tell when you're out of invisible ink? And if everything seems to be going well, you have obviously overlooked something. Depression is merely anger without enthusiasm. Hard work pays off in the future. Laziness pays off now. And I intend to live forever. So far, so good. Eagles may soar, but weasels don't get sucked into jet engines. And I like this one. What happens if you get scared half to death twice? Think about it. My mechanic told me, I couldn't repair your brakes, so I made your horn louder. And why do psychics have to ask you for your name? Well, that's a good question. Lots of these, the mind of Stephen Wright, and my kind of comedian. I really enjoy him a lot. Thanks for sending that. Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. I really appreciate it. It's always interesting to hear your comments and read all your email every day, and we try and answer as much as we can. Stay tuned for Mark coming up next. May have a chance to visit with Mark here pretty soon, toward the end of the month. Hope so, anyway. Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. Always glad to have each and every one of you along with us. Don't forget, we are a listener-supported program. And you can help out by going to theguyjamesshow.com. Do visit our new blog. I'm a little disappointed with that. Not getting enough visits over at the new blog. And it's theguyjamesshow.com/blog. That simple. And we put some of our rants up there for you to read and comment upon. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. Once again, thanks to Billy Shears, music director, proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.